From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Thursday, August 15th, 2024. I'm your host, Boston Christopher, Gwyneth Cheesh, Hawa, Toxic Newsome, Salama. Thank you for joining the conversation. On today's show, we'll talk with the Alaska State Library about public programs, including the Talking Book Library and more. Plus, we'll deep dive, or maybe it's deep dish, with Mark Wheeler, former owner of Copa. He has a new cookbook available for all where he shares recipes, stories, and more. We'll get a tasting and all the details. Those conversations coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Hanson Gress, ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta khanakaya ha anikak gunish cheesh.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clan Idi have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. You're listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. The Alaska State Library works to promote and coordinate library services across the community of all Alaska libraries. It also serves as the primary research library for the state government, as well as collecting and preserving a myriad of Alaska-related materials. Today, we're going to hear about a few services, including the Talking Book Center, which provides audiobooks, large print, and braille books to people with visual or reading disabilities. And here to share more about that and other programs are Freya Anderson, who is a regional librarian and head of historical collections, as well as Susan Hames, a board member of the Friends of the Alaska State Library Archives and Museums. Gwyneth Cheesh, Haiyadi, thank you so much for joining us. Freya's joining us via Zoom, and Susan's right here in the studio. It's a pleasure to have you both in. Wasi'iti, how's it going?
Going pretty well. It's hard to complain with the weather like we have it today, is it?
Yeah, I know. Summer is in full swing, which we love. The sun is out. It's a gorgeous day. People listening to KTOO on their headphones as they're taking a stroll or maybe in their afternoon workplace, all that good stuff. So it's really a pleasure to have you both here. So first of all, I thought, Freya, maybe you could just give us a little detail overall about the Alaska State Library.
Okay. Well, there's basically three different sections of the library. There's library development, which works with libraries around the state in a myriad of ways. And I'm less involved with that one. And then there's information services, where we collect current materials primarily, and also serve state employees so they can get the information that they need to best serve all Alaskans. And then there's historical collections, where we collect and preserve and provide access to Alaska's history and culture. And Talking Books is kind of a thing that got added in a few years back to my duties, but it's one of my favorite pieces. It falls within information services, but it's really its own unique thing. And it's an amazing service. And so I really appreciate the opportunity to share about that here with you, because the saddest thing about it is that we often get people applying who would have been eligible quite a long time before and just didn't know about it. So I'm hoping, I appreciate the help to get the word out. And that's basically providing audiobooks, Braille, and large print for people with who are blind or have visual disabilities. I like to give the example of my mom, who had cataract surgery, and after that she had better than 20/20 vision, but her eyes would get very strained and painful after just a few minutes. So in terms of like reading signs or filling out a form, it was no big deal, but she really just couldn't sit and read a book anymore. And then also for people with physical disabilities that prevent them from holding or manipulating a book. So I had a friend with very bad arthritis in both of his wrists, and he couldn't hold a book or manipulate it for more than a minute or so. And he was eligible for the program. And then the third category is for people with reading disabilities. And I'm mostly excited about this one right now. For a long time, we provided the service to people with reading disabilities, but for that group, the application process was a bit onerous. And so I'm afraid a lot of people might be staying away because of memories of that. And indeed, it has changed dramatically. The federal rules have changed. It's really easy to qualify if you meet those simple qualifications, you don't have to get a doctor or anything like that anymore for that. And that basically just means that you have some sort of reading disability. And one people think of probably most often is dyslexia, but it could be any disability that makes it just really difficult for you to read a traditional book. And that's available for kids. The whole service is available. We have books for little kids that are just a couple minutes long, and all the way up to, you know, we have people in their 90s in the program.
Oh, that's so wonderful. Yeah, that's really great. And I do want to give out the website for this. You can go to specifically for the Talking Book Center. You can go to lam.alaska.gov/TBC. And that is the website where it's comprehensive. It has a lot of FAQs on here in terms of questions you might have, how to be eligible, how to apply, equipment that's possibly needed, and all that kind of stuff that is on there to answer your questions about that program. And I do want to talk a little bit more about that. I also just want to mention that you can find out more about the library at library.alaska.gov, as we're talking about the Alaska State Library here with Freya and Susan. And what's interesting that you were talking about at the beginning there, Freya, is that some people may not even know that this service exists, because I think sometimes when people think of a library, they think of, let's say, the Juneau Public Library is a sort of local library where they can go and take right. their kids and do things. And obviously the Alaska State Library does a lot for the state government and for researchers, but there's also these wonderful programs that are for lack of a better term, regular folks, right? For the general public that can use, right. such as the Talking Book Center, or we'll talk a little bit about it in a little bit, but the Statewide Library Electronic Doorway, which is also a really cool program that anybody has access to. So, but in terms of the Alaska Talking Book Center, how many books are available through that? Is it a wide collection?
It's a wide collection. It's like a public library. So there are other services that would provide textbooks or classroom materials. So this isn't so much for that, unless you wanted to do a book report or delve into a topic a little bit more. So it's like a public library collection. I believe the numbers are about 200,000 books. It's a national program. And so nowadays, once upon a time, they used to have to mail around cartridges to everybody, and not all of the states maybe had as many titles. But now we're doing more. Even if the individual's not doing downloading, which they can, that is one of the options. But even if they're not, we're downloading those and adding those to cartridges for folks. And so there's no holds. You don't have to wait for a hold or anything. I also wanted to mention that you brought up Juneau Public Library, and the three branches we have here are just awesome, and they do a fantastic job, and they have access to a lot of audiobooks as well. And so this is a complementary. So there is some overlap in titles, and the nice thing about this one is that there are some potentially easier ways of getting it, and there are also like I mentioned, no holds. But there's also places where they don't overlap. And so you may be able to access books that maybe you could get at the public library in print, but maybe not in audio.
I see. And I know you mentioned that there are obviously audio books, but then there's other books that might be available via Braille or large print mm-hmm. books. And I know you mentioned that this is also a national program. It'd be interesting to just hear a little bit about that, because I'm looking at one of the questions here on the website, and it's like, what equipment is needed? And it says the Utah State Library for the Blind and Disabled will provide you with the necessary equipment to listen right. to these books for as long as you want to use the program. So obviously they are part of the national partnership. And then I know also that the Institute of Museum and Library Services is another big partner for you in this. Yeah.
Right. And also the National Library Service for the Blind and Print Disabled at the Library of Congress.
I see.
And they're the ones who coordinate it nationally, actually internationally. If you're a U.S. citizen abroad, you're also eligible for the program, but they coordinate it. There are programs in each state. Some states, some of the more populous states, have sub libraries, regional libraries. We have the one, and then we contract out with Utah to provide. Most of the direct services to users. And what we found with this, we started contracting out to them, I think about 10 years ago, for part of the services, and expanded that. And what we found is we can actually, because of their increased scale, we're able to actually provide more services to people than we had been when we were doing it directly, including we're able to provide more Alaskan titles because they have a reading program set up. So we're able to get more and more Alaskan books read into the program.
I see. Okay, that's cool. So let's talk a little bit about the logistics of it. Like, somebody has to apply before they can be sent books, right? This isn't where you just walk into right. a library and check it out. So tell us a little right. bit about that process.
So we have our application on our website, and the NLS, the national program, is working on getting one that you can just fill online, but right now we have it available online, but it does need to be sent in to us. And it's a really simple application. The first page is telling us a little bit of information about you, so we can get in who you are and how we can get in touch with you, basically. And then we do need somebody to certify, and there's a long list of people who can certify you, your eligibility, including a teacher or a librarian or a doctor or a social worker. It could be, I mean, the list is quite long. It just can't be somebody you're directly related to.
Okay.
Like in your same family.
Mm-hmm.
But once you're certified, then there's quite a few pages where there's information on how you want to get the books. Do you want us to provide a player and send mail cartridges to listen to the books? Would you prefer to download yourself to a tablet or smartphone? Would you like to do both? And so on. Are you interested in Braille? Those kinds of questions. And also what sort of books you're interested in, because we have readers advisors, and there are two different ways that you can get books. You can pick them out yourself from just talking to people, or there's a little magazine that goes out, audio magazine that goes out with descriptions of new titles that you can select from. Or you can work with a reader's advisor and they'll pick out books that they think will fit with your interests. So you don't have to know ahead of time what specific book you need. I think that's more common with some of our users who are less technologically comfortable.
Yeah, I totally understand that. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. We're talking to the Alaska State Library about the Talking Book Center, as well as some other things. And this Talking Book Center is available for children and adults. As Freya said, it goes people from little kids all the way up to 90 or more. And it's for those who may not be able to read standard print due to legal blindness, visual disability, physical disability, reading disability, et cetera. And you can find out more about this at talkingbooks.alaska.gov and or the lam.alaska.gov/TBC. And what's really cool about this is there's really no cost for this, right, Freya? There's no charge.
There's no charge to the user. Yeah. We provide the special equipment for listening to the cartridges. We mail the cartridges. There's no shipping costs either direction. Basically, when you're sending back a cartridge, you just flip over the address card so that it has the library's address on the reverse. Put that back into the plastic cartridge that it comes in and pop it in the mail. And there's no postage either direction. I suppose the only cost might be if you elect to use a smartphone or tablet to download the books, then you would need to have a smartphone or tablet to do that with. We don't provide those.
But there's no charge to download over the mobile app.
No,
it's just
none whatsoever.
You have to have the phone to be able to do that, which does make sense. And of course, I do want to mention this too, for the Talking Book Center. They're open from Monday through Friday from 8 to 4:30 for questions or emails, or if you need to find out more information about this particular program, you can call. There's an 800 number, 888-820-4525. Or a local number, 907-465-5901, talkingbooks.alaska.gov. It's a wonderful program. It's been around since 1972. And it's an amazing, just one of the many things that the Alaska State Library does. I do want to talk about some of the other things, but I want to bring Susan into the conversation as a board member. Tell us a little bit about what your role is and what you do, Susan.
Well, the board, the Friends of the State Library Archives and Museum, as we call it, FOSLAM, promotes and supports activities at the State Library Archives and Museum. We administer grants for acquisitions for the historical collection, museums, that kind of thing. We provide donations to lecture series, acquisitions, And we co-sponsor events like Cumbrio, which is coming up August 31st at the museum. You can join, become a member, and as part of the membership, you get an annual pass to the museum. We fund visiting artists and lectures. So all the donations that we receive, plus grants that we administer. And then we also have an endowment fund that's there for kind of long-term funding of programs and artifacts that the library might, I mean, the museum and or library archives might need.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing to think about that, you know, the library that is just one part of this big, big project, you know, the State Archives, Library and Museum. And, you know, when you look next door here to KTO and you see the museum, you think of it as that, a museum. But there's also folks who work in there who are archiving and they're part of that work. And, you know, I wanted to ask you, Freya, a little bit about your other work as a historian. In terms of, yeah. of that, because you talked about how the Talking Book Center sort of became added to your plate of duties. but your first issue was where is as a historian as well, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, I started out in information services, but I took on historical collections quite a few years ago now, gosh, time flies. And and I really love it. It's the historical collections is really a treasure trove for all Alaskans or really anybody who's interested in Alaska. We have extraordinary collections of Alaskan materials from, you know, the 1700s up until now.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of mind-boggling. And we're constantly working to try to make it more accessible as well as to preserve it for future generations. One program in the historical collections that's really exciting, just for the last, I guess, 4 or 5 years, we've been working with a different program at the Library of Congress called Chronicling America to digitize newspapers and get those in a good position for preservation, but also available online through the Chronicling America website at the Library of Congress. And that has really, it's been amazing. We're getting more, we've been in a little bit of a hiatus. We've got somebody coming on very shortly and we're going to get going on it again here very shortly. But we have newspapers, mostly older newspapers. Well, all older newspapers from around the state because of copyright. Mm-hmm. From around the state that have been digitized and put up. And we're finding that it is really a fantastic research tool. There is enough up there that people who aren't necessarily looking for something specific, or sometimes when they are, can really find extraordinary things. And then you can actually, you can read the text, but you can also see the actual pages of the newspaper. And I think that's so valuable with newspapers, especially because so much of what you get from a newspaper is beyond those sort of key historical articles. It's seeing the ads, it's seeing the kinds of articles that mostly might not come up in a search, but show what the community was like. Mrs. So-and-so had 12 friends over for tea last Saturday, and this is what it was like, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
These Coming into town next week. We should all say hi.
I miss those. You know, we have them digitally in certain ways, but there's nothing like sitting down with a newspaper. And like you're saying, if you're researching something, obviously you're going to see, you know, maybe something out of the corner of your eye on the page that takes you and gives you a nice warm memory of different things, a different time, a different era. That's really cool. And so this kind of leads into my next question, which is about this program, the statewide library electronic doorway. What a great name. I mean, obviously it's SLED, which is a perfect name for Alaska, but and so somebody came up with that so they could make, they probably started with the sled and then they figured out how to make it a thing, right? Make it,
it could
a name
be.
But tell us a little bit about that.
It made a little more sense back at the beginning when this system actually provided dial-in access to library catalogs and provided some very early internet access for people who could do dial-up.
Oh, wow.
So it made a little bit more sense in that context then. We don't do that part now.
So what is it now? What do I use SLED for?
Well, I think what most people think of with SLED is the what we call the SLED databases, and those have had different names. They've over the years they've been databases for Alaskans or Alaska's Digital Pipeline. A colleague of mine likes to call it Alaska's Information Dividend, but basically, it's a way that libraries and universities around the state have gotten together to take electronic resources that we would want to get for our own users. And by working together, we're able to make them available to all Alaskans. And that's a really exciting thing. So for those databases, any Alaskan can access them, whether or not they have a library or a library card. All they need is internet access, and they can go in and find out, do anything from academic research to BrainPop, which is, I hear, very popular with the kids. or they can learn how to knit. You know, right. I mean, it's all over the board. There's a wide variety of resources available.
Yeah, I'm on the website right now. It's lam.alaska.gov/sled, SLED. And I love it because just right at the top of the page there, there's a little search bar and you can just type in anything you want, right?
Yeah.
And see what comes up.
Right. Right. And that will search most of the databases that we have available. There are some that don't lend themselves to searching so well. They're more, we go in and use something, but they also will show, if you're looking on that page on the right-hand side, there is a list of different subject areas. And those have links of free websites that have been curated by Alaskan librarians. And we've pulled together sites that that you can really count on. You know, they have good information there, mostly about Alaska, mostly Alaskan sites. Again, we've gone through a lot of transitions, and once upon a time we tried to do the internet, but we gave up on that. And now we really focus on some of those wonderful sites that might be harder to find if you're not regularly doing searches in that area, so the search engines don't think that's what you'll want, or if they're oftentimes small sites, you know, so they don't necessarily come up high in traffic and search results?
Well, we have just basically scratched the surface. There's so much available. Like when you go to the main page, when you go to library.alaska.gov, the first page, the homepage, is full of links and has all kind of information. You can go down as many rabbit trails as you want to go down. And so today it was really nice to hear about two programs, the Talking Book Center, as well as the Statewide Library Electronic Doorway, or SLED, two programs that are available from the Alaska State Library. And Susan, I wanted to just mention for you, if there's anything, you mentioned Combrio, that you're working with them as maybe a concert coming up at the end of the month. Is there anything else we should be looking out from the Friends of the SLAM?
Well, there's ongoing exhibits at the museum. The Combrio concert is August 31st, and then there's another concert later in September.
And those are done in the foyer. They're so beautiful in there. Right. Sound, it would lend itself to such great sound, I would think, in there.
Yes, it does. Yeah. We've recently started, we host First Fridays, and we've been organizing music for those First Fridays. So that'll start up again in October, when First Friday at the museum. And so it's quite fun. We provide snacks and music. So that'll be happening then, starting up again in October. That's about it right now. The exhibits that are up now are wonderful, and some of those come down in October. So I would encourage everyone to go check out the current exhibits.
Yeah, the exhibit there, I went the other day, and it's really good. The sort of the
adaptation, protection, resilience.
Adaptation, protection, resilience. It's a really great piece. There's some wonderful pieces in there. And there's even someone in there that's working on something.
Lou Logan is crafting a kayak. And he's there every day, or most days. Working on the kayak. So it's been a really fun summer. I think they've had lots of visitors and lots going on.
I love that. Well, Freya Anderson, Susan Hames, thank you so much for coming in today. Is there anything else that you want to mention before we head out?
I just want to say that the people who work at the SLAM are just fantastic. The staff is incredible, and they just offer so many services and programs. It's absolutely amazing.
Absolutely. Freya, anything?
I think we're a mutual admiration society here. but I did also want to mention the State Archives. They've sort of come up in that trilogy there, and they actually have a new exhibit upstairs.
So when you go to the museum, don't forget to
go upstairs.
Thanks,
Freya.
Absolutely.
And we have some beautiful art upstairs built into the building too.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a wonderful facility. So, well, thank you for coming on the show today and giving us the details of all these programs and everything. And folks, get out there to the museum. And also, if you know anybody who can take advantage of the Talking Book Center, make sure you do that. And if you need some research or anything you need to find on the internet about Alaska, go to the SLED. And you'll probably find something that'll spark an interest or take you down your own rabbit trail. So, Gunthish, for coming in today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Boston.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Yeah. Up next, here we go with a Thlinkit Word of the Week.
You're listening to KTOO's Thlinkit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Kushtak-U, Bill Fawcett. And the word this week is chas.
Chas.
That means pink salmon or humpy. And here's a sentence. The humpy really flowed along. Let's hear it again. Pink salmon or humpy. Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska at Southeast for this audio.
Kushtak O'ish Bill Fawcett was Shlukach Adi and the child of a southern Toshone man who passed away before Bill was born. His mother later married Tsihua Bill Fawcett, who helped raise Bill. He lived on Akkwan Ani and enjoyed working with advanced language learners, helping them answer difficult questions about the language.
Tune in next week for another Thlinkit Word of the Week from KTOO.
And it It was the first day of school today for students in the Juneau School District, and it's also the first time students headed to the newly consolidated high school and middle school campuses. As KTO's Clarice Larson reports, the morning was filled with lots of nerves and excitement.
The neighborhood surrounding Juneau Douglas High School, Yadaakathle in downtown Juneau, is packed. Cars line the streets, buses fill the roads, and students shuffle down the sidewalks. Juniors Jimena Ramirez and Aurora Cole are headed to their first classes. Ramirez says she's got a lot of emotions running through her head right now.
I think it's chill. I'm excited for it. I'm just like nervous. Like I think everybody's nervous to like just be with everybody, find parking and stuff like that.
This school year is the first time in 16 years that all high school students in Juneau are under one roof, instead of splitting between Juneau Douglas and Thunder Mountain High School in the Mendenhall Valley. That's because the building is now Thunder Mountain Middle School. This past winter, the school board voted to consolidate Juneau's high school and middle schools, among other cost-cutting measures, in order to fix a multi-million dollar budget crisis. Ramirez went to Juneau Douglas last year, but this is Cole's first year here from Thunder Mountain. She says it's nice to have some friends like Ramirez to help guide her through the new building, but she's still nervous.
Kind of exciting just because of all the people, but it's also scary because you just know nothing.
And it's not just students who are on edge.
It's just a lot of unknown, I guess. I think we're trying to go into it optimistically, but it's a big, big, big shift for us.
That's Brooke Roeder, a parent of a junior starting his first year at Juneau Douglas after spending his first 2 years at Thunder Mountain, which is closer to their home. Roeder says she might be a little more nervous than her kid.
He's been positive, you know, the whole time, as well as all of his friends that I've talked to. They're just going into it more positively, I think, than I feel right now. I'm just nervous mostly.
Juneau School Board member Brittany Choney Haywood was at the high school Thursday morning to check in on how things were going. She says she's heard a few concerns like the lack of parking downtown, a few late buses, and scheduling issues for some students. But overall, things are going better than she had hoped.
At this point anyway, from the little that I've seen, feels like it's going fairly smoothly. I believe that there probably will be some rough spots as we kind of try and get those smoothed out. Patience and grace.
Across town at the newly combined middle school campus at Thunder Mountain, the parking lot was a lot less empty than in years before. As parents line the drop-off lane to say goodbye to their kids, 7th grade student Sienna Call stands in front of a sign outside of the school so that her dad, Neil Call, can take her photo.
I'm feeling pretty confident because I have some friends that I'm excited to see them here.
One downside for Sienna and her dad is that they live right next to the former Floyd Dryden Middle School, which she says she would have attended had it not closed down this year under the consolidation plan. But Neil says they're staying positive.
When they closed that, it's kind of a bummer, but it's a really nice facility here, so the middle schoolers are gonna have a good learning experience, and that's the main thing.
In an interview earlier this week, Superintendent Frank Hauser said he is confident that consolidating schools is a major milestone for getting the district back on track financially.
I think the district is positioned to be more responsive, but at the same time, being able to provide those opportunities for our students and really expanding out, and not having to reduce more because of those costs. The consolidation really made it possible to put us on firm financial footing.
But with state funding for education in unknown territory heading into the next legislative session, Hauser warns there still could be more bumps to come on the road ahead. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
And starting next Tuesday and running for 8 weeks is a free Tai Chi class for seniors 60 plus. The class will meet on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 11 to noon, and it will be taught by a certified instructor. Pre-registration is required. Please call 907-463-6113 for details and to receive the registration packet. The program is provided by a grant from the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services through Southeast Senior Services, a division of Catholic Community Service. Up next, Mark Wheeler, former owner of Copa and its variety of ice creams, is answering the call and making his recipes available in a new cookbook. We'll find out more here on Juneau Afternoon from KTOO. Up next. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. After many, many years, Mark Wheeler decided it was time to sell his beloved Copa coffee shop, and along with it, the decision to stop making and selling the beloved ice cream that everybody's clamored for. But now, Mark has created a way for folks to hang on to those memories of all those delicious flavors and is offering a cookbook of recipes. And, you know, you can make new memories, Mark, with your family or friends or whatnot at a party. Mark Gunnith-Cheese, for being here today. It's such a pleasure to have you here. Wasi Iti, how's it going?
Okay. How'd it gone?
This is really, really cool. And I just want to give this website out in case people want to follow along, because it's not like marksicecreamrecipes.com or anything like that.
It's a pretty weird name.
It's candiedsalmonandrhubarb.com. And so I want to first start with, you know, your decision to move on from Copa. Tell us a little bit about why you made that decision. And also, I know there was you actually stopped making the ice cream, I think, right before you sold Copa, because of some issues, supply chains or what?
So my wife and I opened Copa in 2013.
Yeah.
And the idea was to put in a coffee shop, but I love making ice cream. So I was like, okay, let's do coffee. Let's try ice cream as well. And it was a labor of love for the most part. And, you know, coffee and ice cream balance pretty well. But, you know, making ice cream 1,000 miles away from a dairy is a little bit nuts. So, it was a great ride. And, I didn't have any intention of selling or closing when we did, but the labor shortage was really crushing for us.
Right.
That was honestly the hardest part. And, you know, I'm 52 and restaurant work is really physical, especially making ice cream. You're lifting these huge like vats of liquid above your head. And, you know, we couldn't keep our kitchen staffed. And I was subbing in for the cook for months at a time. And it was just too hard. So, you know, luckily we found one of our former staff, Maddie Combrink, to take the reins and
more youthful energy.
Yes, youthful energy and lots of great ideas. And she's taking it on and charted her own course with it. And she decided not to keep making ice cream, which is, I mean, I totally understand. And she's doing new things, like she's roasting her own coffee now, which is super cool. And,
oh, that's cool.
You know, it's a lot cheaper to ship coffee beans than ice cream. So we would, you know, we use the ice cream mix from Alpenrose Dairy in Portland, Oregon. And that's the thing, you have to ship up frozen.
Okay.
So we'd have to put it on a truck in Portland, truck it to Seattle, put it on the barge where it's frozen, mm-hmm. and ship it up to Juneau, which is super expensive. And frankly, more expensive than to ship it to Anchorage.
Wow.
Yeah. So my colleague at Wild Scoops in Anchorage, we were comparing notes towards the end. I was selling her some of my gear and asked her what her shipping costs were. They were like a third of what I paid.
Wow.
Which made me want to gouge out my eyeballs, you know? honestly, we just have a monopoly on shipping to Juneau, and it's making stuff cost more. That's why everything costs more here. People don't realize it, but in everything I bought in, you know, Seattle from Cisco, tack on 25%.
Mm.
And then, you know, shipping the ice cream up here was just, it was super expensive. But
well, some of my favorite moments were especially like being able to walk into local food chains and see the ice cream available in the ice cream aisle.
Yeah.
And that was a really cool thing that started to happen there like the last year or year and a half or so. Yeah,
that was one of our COVID pivots.
Yeah.
You know, we had some funding from the federal government, which really helped get through COVID. But one thing we did was bought a bigger ice cream machine to sell in the stores, because I didn't know if we were going to be open, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It was really fun to have that program. And probably the apex of that was I got to export ice cream. So we sold ice cream in Jim Michener's salt shop in Sitka. So we made our salted caramel with his salt. So he loved our ice cream, and we would go to Seaplanes. I'd drop off a cooler at Seaplanes. I would make sure they put it in the freezer, you know, and then they would ship it to Jim. He'd go to the airport, meet it right away, and he sold it in the back of his shop. And it was super fun.
You're after my heart right there, because that salted caramel was some of the best ice cream I've I've ever had.
Oh, well, thank you.
And also another one of my favorites was deep chocolate.
Yeah, well, they're both in the cookbook.
I know, that's what I'm so let's see. So then when did you sell? It was about a year or so ago.
It was November 22.
Okay, so it's been almost 2 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so when did the idea for this cookbook come about?
Well, that was kind of a pandemic thing too. You know, I had some time on my hands and I was like, I'm going to write a cookbook. And so originally it was going to be, you know, ice cream, pastries, and food, and tell a bunch of stories. And then I just got overwhelmed. And, you know, like the number of books that sell more than 100 copies is like 1% of all books. So it's pretty daunting. And publishers want to know how many followers you have and all this stuff before they'll publish. But so I gave up. You know, it was just too overwhelming. But this year I've been like, oh, I just want to get this out there. And, you know, sort of be like a gift to the community, you know, put these recipes out there, have people recreate those memories at home. And at the same time, I really want to inspire people to make their own ice cream. You know, like ice cream is this amazing blank palette that you can paint all kinds of emotions and feelings onto. And so I try to teach people some techniques in here that they could apply to their own ingredients. You know, we have spruce tip ice cream here, but maybe, I don't know, somewhere else they can make a pine ice cream. I don't know. But, you know, trying to showcase using Alaskan ingredients and doing it in a creative way, you know, hopefully we'll inspire others to try stuff out.
And so like some of the, what's great about this, so you pivoted from doing like a printed book, which probably would have maybe had to have some cost for folks, but now it's basically a cookbook on the internet. It's a website and we're talking about it. It's candiedsalmonandrhubarb.com. I'm here with Mark Wheeler on Juno Afternoon. We're talking about his ice cream recipes. And what's cool about it too, is that on the website, it's not just ice cream recipes, you also have some articles, like, you know, one of them is ice cream basics, right? Like just how do you, because I love that you're talking about that, like people, you're giving people the foundational structure of what it is to then maybe be creative in their own way to make some of this ice cream. And I also love that you had another article on here. I think it was Juno's ice cream history, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. And there's certain qualities to ice cream that you just have to think about. Like I would teach ice cream making to the middle school's after school program. And I loved asking the kids what phase of matter ice cream is.
Mm.
They would rarely get it right.
What? Wait, say that one. What's the question?
Is ice cream a solid, a liquid, or a gas?
Solid, liquid, or a gas? That's a very good question. I know that the lady downtown who has the little ice cream shop, and she was doing the nitro gas ice cream. Yeah. So maybe I'm going to just guess and say gas.
It is actually multi-phase.
Okay, multi-phase.
So it's all three.
Oh, it's all three?
It's all three.
You tricked me.
Yeah, it's a tricky question. So the, you know, the ice.
You didn't give me D, all of the above.
The ice and the fat, those are solid, and the protein. The water stays in solution because of the sugar.
Mm.
So that's what makes ice cream creamy. If you didn't have sugar, it'd just be a block of ice.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the salt, the sugar in solution with water, and then you have air. It's a foam because there's these little bubbles trapped throughout it, bubbles of air. And that's what gives ice cream kind of this, evaporative sense when you eat it. But with that in mind, like if you just throw some stuff in ice cream, it might not be so great. Like I tried to make a chocolate ice cream with potato chips inside.
Mm.
So what happened to the potato chips?
They got too soggy.
They got soggy because the water in the ice cream makes it soggy. So then you have to enrobe stuff that you want to stay solid.
That's why the chips are in chocolate.
Yes. Or buttered pecan. You put the butter on the pecan.
So it doesn't get all smushy.
Something else smushy.
Oh, that's amazing.
So that's just something to think about when you're making ice cream. And then, you know, the coldness of the ice cream. Like if you put in caramel, the coldness of the ice cream is going to make that seize up.
Yeah.
So you put a little butter in it. You put some butter in your caramel and that keeps it chewy.
Okay.
And then if you want to put chocolate chips in ice cream, if you just threw in chocolate chips in your ice cream, it's going to be all waxy and hard and not pleasant. So I teach people in this how to make a magic shell. So you make a magic shell, which is basically oil and chocolate. You throw the magic shell in there, break it up, and those become chocolate chips. But when the chocolate chips hit your mouth, they melt instantly.
Wow.
So that I just try to teach people stuff like that, that, you know, you kind of learn the hard way by, you know, trial and error.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
And hopefully people can take that. And, you know, I have a recipe for a blueberry chocolate chip ice cream in there. But you could take whatever berry you want, you know,
right,
and put it in there and use that technique. And I also talk about like using acids as a way to balance sweet. I really believe in salt in ice cream. Like you go to a lot of scoop shops and you taste the ice cream. It doesn't have any salt.
Uh-huh.
And that's just a missed opportunity because salt enhances other flavors. So I really wanted my flavors to be big, to just pop, and to be like I used to love being in Italy and eating gelato. Like when you eat gelato, it just like hits you in the face. That like you're eating a lemon, you know, when you have lemon gelato. So I really wanted my flavors to be prominent and have a similar taste profile. Along the way. But you know what? I brought something for you, Boston.
What did you bring?
I brought a couple of presents.
Oh my goodness. All right.
One of the fun things that I learned along the way was my friend Leona Santiago, amazing person. She taught me how to make soap berries.
Okay.
Which is Tlingit ice cream.
Yeah.
Hachli is the Tlingit word. And I really wanted to learn how to make soap berries. I heard about it for years. And she taught me the secrets. And
there it is. I'm on the page right now.
It's amazing. Soap berries, they grow in the interior. I was in Denali Park last weekend and I picked some and I brought you a little bit.
Okay.
So you can try doing this at home.
Let me try it.
Soap berries are this amazing plant. The berries are really soapy, like bears eat them, but you know, humans don't really eat them raw. But they have a saponin in them, which is a chemical that makes them foam.
Okay.
Don't open that yet.
Oh, don't open it yet.
Yeah, no. Okay. So what you do is like just a couple tablespoons of soap berries.
Yeah.
And in a KitchenAid mixer, you'll fill up that bowl of that mixer with this foam and a little sugar and a little water. And then at the end, use like a banana or strawberries or something to keep it together. But she taught me how to make these, and it was such a special experience. And you know, one time we went to the TCLL program at Harborview and showed the kids how to do it. And it's just like magical. It just like, I put some photos on the recipe page there about
it. Yeah, I see that.
Show that. And then, Hune Lance Twitchell was in our shop one day and he had consulted the elders to ask them, what's the Tlingit word for ice cream? And they told him frozen soap berries. So there's a little video. He was in the store and I was like, and we had kids, kids in the store from Yakega. get the name right. But he taught these kids in the store how to say frozen soap berries and Tlingit.
Oh, I love that.
So we have a little video of that.
Let me see if I can play that. Let's see if we can hear that.
Oh, really? You're gonna try that?
Yeah, I'm gonna try it. See if we can hear it here.
So here's how you say soap berries and Tlingit, okay? Hopti.
Hopti.
Hopti. So the first sound is like when a jet airplane takes off, it goes. You made that sound? Second sound goes up. Third sound goes. The last two go.
I love that.
That's, he's just smiling the whole time. He's just loving it.
And you can find that video on the candiedsalmonandrhubarb.com website. Under the page for Tlingit ice cream. It's at the bottom of the page there if you want to learn how to pronounce that.
I also brought you some ice cream.
Oh, you brought me actual ice cream. Yeah, I gotta try it.
So I, you know, it's cherry season in the flats. And one of the, one of my favorite things to do was pick my neighbor's cherry trees. I would do it in exchange for pints of ice cream. So I would.
Oh my God.
I'd pick their trees.
No, not too much. Not too much. Okay. Oh my goodness.
Give this a try.
Yeah. Okay. Here, let me try that. Now, what flavor am I trying here?
Yeah, this is our flats cherry ice cream.
Okay. Okay.
So I would pick at some physical peril, cherries from the neighbors. We have these Montmorency cherries, these pie cherries that grow in the neighborhood, and make amazing ice cream. I took this David Leibovitz recipe of using cherries to make a jam without pectin. You just cook them down forever with sugar, and they have enough pectin to make a jam. But at the end, we flash some Amalga whiskey in the cherries. So that chapter is cherry and cherries.
And you know what I love about this right now is, and I'm taking pictures to prove that I'm actually, and even put it in a KTOO cup, which I think is great. It's so good. But the thing that you made me think about when you said you mentioned salt, because I think that's one thing I love. I can taste the salt. And then in the deep chocolate, I always would be like, what is that? I was almost not able to to discern what it was.
It was also eggs.
Eggs. Okay. Eggs. Yeah. This is so good.
Yeah. Salt makes things pop, but eggs give a richness to ice cream. So our deep chocolate was, we want to be intensely chocolate. So most chocolate ice cream you have is made with cocoa powder. So we use cocoa powder, but then we also use it. We used real melted chocolate.
I'm going to do ASMR right now. So good. Oh my God. Okay. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time.
Oh.
But I'm going to get off the air and keep eating this.
I believe so for the rest of the staff.
We have, oh, that's so nice of you to do that.
A little bit left.
So it's Mark, and he has created a website for all of these recipes for ice cream, which is just amazing. And you go to candiedsalmonandrhubarb.com, and you can learn about the history of ice cream. You can learn about Juno's history with ice cream, all the recipes. From the rhubarb sherbet, the candied salmon, the Thlinkit ice cream, the wild blueberry, the deep chocolate, the birch syrup, kelp, cherries, and whiskey, which is, I think, what I'm eating right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is so good. But Mark, thank you so much, and congrats on making, and the fact that you made this available to the community at no charge is just awesome, and I really appreciate that.
I hope people give it a shot, you know, get messy with it, try your own thing. But I hope people, you know, can learn just a few things and kind of remember what the rhubarb sherbet used to taste like at Copa.
I love that. Thank you so much, Mark. It's great to have you here.
Gashish.
And that's going to do it for today's Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, Marion Call from Alaska Independent Musicians Initiative. Plus, we'll hear about Blackwater Railroad Company's new album and their performances in Juno this week. Plus, we'll get caught up with the Juno Public Libraries on upcoming events. The Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday right here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gunith Cheesh, and have a glorious Juno evening.